Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is another Bob and Richard show where we answer questions sent in by our readers. Many were sent in to our show at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Also, Richard posted a request for questions on both the Gambling with an Edge website as well as the Twitter and Facebook account. And you folks responded. Thank you very much. We actually have time for two. We have enough stuff for two shows. So today we're going to pick half the questions, and then we're going to, sometime in the near future, going to do this again. First question we just got was, it's actually right up Richard's alley, so I'm going to answer it first. Somebody wants us to do a show about all the AP opportunities in Macau. So what I want to say about it is I haven't been yet to Macau. I don't know of any AP plays. And if I did, announcing a whole list of them on this show would be the last thing I would want to do with it. There's enough listeners here who would take advantage of that and would kill any plays I knew very quickly. So that's one show that isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't been to Macau in a long time. They have very, very few blackjack tables. And yeah, as you said, Bob, we wouldn't talk about any kind of specific play. So, you know, even if we were qualified to talk about it, it's probably something we wouldn't talk about anyway. So,
yeah, and it's one, like in video poker, I write a lot about video poker plays, but it's after those promotions are gone and over.
Right, and, but hopefully the listener can learn something about that, and then when they see something similar in the future, then they can, you know, they have something, some knowledge so that they can apply it.
Exactly. And so, but current things, I don't like, as we tape this, which is before you're going to hear it, there's a promotion this weekend at a casino where I think it's worth $5,000 to $10,000 a person for 2 days' work. And so I told Richard about it. And I said, before I told him, I go, this is how much I think it's worth. I can use somebody else to play it too. It's not necessary. But part of the deal is if you cannot do this for whatever reason, you don't want to or you can't or something, that you can't tell anybody else because I'll go find somebody else that I want to do it with or not. And so, and Richard said, sure, I can live with those conditions. And so I told him, and it turned out he had some honeydews from his wife, and so he's not going to do it. But that's kind of the level that people who know about AP plays do it. And they don't put it out there for the world. All right. Next question. Somebody said, it's fairly common for strong video poker players to sometimes play slot machines for cover so that the casino doesn't peg them as APs. One listener plays must-hit-buy slots, which are close to or above break-even. He wants to know whether this would make him appear to be more like an AP or less. And I don't know. It depends on the casino and their sophistication. The algorithms used by casinos aren't usually that sophisticated, but sometimes they are. For the most part, the decisions are made by machines and they're programmed in, and they're not made by humans. But every casino is different and they're probably, some that use this information to help them make decision and some don't. I'm sorry, I can't give you better information.
Yeah, I don't have an answer to that either. I definitely have done a little bit of that myself. You know, where I think that I may have some trouble. I'm talking about places where I've only played video poker, not where I'm playing table games, because if I'm playing table games, I'm not using a card anyway. But, yeah, it's hard to know what's in the mind of a casino. But it is something I have certainly done. So.
All right. Next question is for Richard. Somebody wants to Richard to discuss traveling bankroll. How much cash should you carry?
Well, that's going to depend greatly on your bankroll and how much you plan to be betting. But, I mean, this is a really important issue, and everybody faces this problem. Lately, airports have been getting better about not confiscating cash. For the last year or two, I have felt that it was safer to fly with cash than it was to drive with cash. I'm fortunate in that I have contacts in various places around the world. So if I were going to Singapore, I could arrange to pick up cash in Singapore or London or things like that. And I realize not everybody has those kind of contacts. I haven't done this yet, but I'm very interested in the use of Bitcoin for this. I think this would be an ideal way to travel with cash, assuming that you can get cash once you're in the place that you're going to play. But as far as how much, I mean, you know, it depends on if your top bet is two hands of 500, then I would probably travel with 20 or 30,000. You know, if your top bet is two hands of 2,000, well, you know, you need four
more
times that, right? So, I would not, I can count on one hand the number of times that I've traveled with over 100,000 in cash, and it's not something that I would want to do today. sorry I can't give you a better answer, but,
Yeah, I want to add to that a little bit, but my game is video poker, which is different, because when I'm playing video poker, I play for stakes where you get W2Gs, so they'll have my name. And so setting up lines of credit is very possible. So setting up a line of credit for 50 or 100 or whatever number you want, flying there, playing, and then flying home with a check or whatever is possible. But because video poker playing uncarded is just not something that is generally an AP move.
Yeah, you know, I should add one other thing on that note. In many foreign countries, you are going to have to show a passport in order to enter the casino. And in at least one case, I established credit at a casino that I decided I'm going to go there and basically just play for the comp, but I'm going to then use that cash to go to the other casino, which actually had a much better game. So, I wired money to Casino A. And they had a deal where they would pay my airfare and hotel and food and all that. And I gave them enough action to cover the comp with a very minimal bet spread, you know, because I figured they're giving me a couple of $1,000 in value in the airfare and food and room. And then I gave them enough action to justify that, but then I would go play at the other casino, which was my real target. So that's an option as well.
All right. Different question. Somebody wants to hear us discuss the comp game in other areas of the country. Also curious about how many hours a week are each of us playing these days and on what? Video poker, blackjack, carnival games, etc. Okay, I'll take that first. I play maybe 20 hours a week with wide variance. Some weeks not at all, some weeks 60 hours, depending. All my play is video poker, and I play almost entirely in Las Vegas, and I'm not particularly knowledgeable in the comp system in other areas of the country. Richard.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on with the comp system in other parts of the country. I suspect that if you're a video poker player, you're much better off than anywhere other than Las Vegas. Las Vegas is pretty, well, not great, I think, for video poker. So I don't really know what the comp system is like. I suspect that getting rooms and things in other places is much easier than Las Vegas is these days. How much do I play? I keep telling myself I'm retired, so I'm playing very little. I play maybe an hour or two of video poker a week, mainly because my wife loves nothing more than to run around and pick up free play and stupid gifts and eat in the casino restaurants. So I am playing very little currently, and pretty much the only time I go out and play table games these days is when somebody calls me up and says, hey, there's this interesting game. And usually it'll be something unusual. It will not be, you know, a blackjack game. It definitely would not be a card counting game. And even I would probably not go anywhere to play a blackjack hole card game. But, you know, like the craps game that was in the New York Times or something interesting, then, yeah, I'll go make a trip. But other than that, I'm not playing too much.
That's what we refer to as Richard's secret game that we never find out about until they write it up in the paper. All right. Another question. If you had found out about Advantage Play earlier in your life, or were a younger man now, would you have left your career and immediately went to being an AP? You want it first or second, Richard?
I can go first. Well, I pretty much did start as soon as I could. I mean, I learned about card counting before I turned 21. And as soon as I graduated college, I moved to Las Vegas and started playing blackjack. I was also working as a dealer because I didn't have a bankroll. But as soon as I had the opportunity to quit my job as a dealer and play full time, that's what I did. But, you know, my experience is that life kind of presents you opportunities and you take them. And I've retired from playing, you know, three or four times. but I always kind of gravitate back to it, even though I got involved in other things and film and television and things like that. But so would I have started any earlier? I mean, I think I started as early as I could because I was also playing backgammon and poker before I turned 21, and that's how I made money while I was in college. So...
I've been playing games since I was a kid. I started playing blackjack, actually backgammon for money when I was 27 and had to go to work 7 years later when I went broke. I kept saving money and learning games in order to try to move to Las Vegas and stay there. I somehow decided that the best way for me to get to Vegas was with a female partner. And it took a while to talk one into it. I moved here in 93 when I was 46 years old and haven't left. So, good. All right. What did each of us do for a career?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry, Bob. You know, I want to just go back to something. You know, when I first started playing and all the other players I knew, or almost all of them, were my age, we were in our early 20s. We all kept talking about how it was going to be so much better when we got older because back then, at least, it looked weird that there were guys in their early 20s betting table max. You know, it just goes over a lot better when you're 40 or 50 or 60. And
Or 70.
Or 70. Yeah, it just looks a lot better. So, I mean, I don't regret starting as early as I could. I'm just saying that, you know, a lot of times there are advantages when you get older that you don't have. I mean, and there are disadvantages, too. Like, I can't see the back of my hand, you know, anymore. But anyway, so there's that.
Okay, so somebody wants to know what we each did for careers. And Richard's already told you a little bit about it.
Let me just take that, finish what I was already saying. So, yeah, life presents you these opportunities, and I got into professional gambling, but I wanted to be an actor, and I was unwilling to go to L.A. and wash dishes at night to do that. So my plan originally was to put together a bankroll and then go to L.A. and be an actor, and pretty much that's what happened. And then I got there and found out I didn't like being an actor, so went back to gambling, but then also was lucky enough to make the transition into working behind the camera in film and television. So I did that, but I always ended up making more money gambling than I made producing or directing or writing or whatever. So
I was a country western dance teacher. That's the source of my dancer pseudonym. I also worked in IT departments for about 10 years between the time I ran out of money playing backgammon and saved enough to move to Vegas with a partner. One of the reasons I became a professional gambler was to get laid. I always heard that professional gamblers just have the ladies coming at them right and left. From at least my personal experience, it works better being a dance teacher than it does a professional gambler.
Yeah. In my experience, that was like the anti-magnet. You say you're a professional gambler and the ladies run the other way.
Yeah, when I recently hooked up with Bonnie, it's been about almost 5 years now, her relatives heard I was a professional gambler, and they were scared as hell that I was going to loot whatever money Bonnie had and just ruin their inheritance. So they were quite panicked about all this. And now they know me, and they don't think that's much chance that's going to happen. But they were pretty scared. So, anyway.
On that note, people also believe that, you're a producer, a director in film or television, and you get laid all the time. And I guess there are guys who do. I just felt like that was so sleazy to try to hit on an actress, that was auditioning for me or working on something that I was doing. That never worked for me either. But plus, I did learn very quickly that dating actresses was really not a good idea. They're all certifiably insane. So, listening, I'm sure we'll get hate mail, but.
So you never invested in casting couches, huh?
Absolutely not. No, I went so far the opposite of that. You know, I always wanted to make sure, that whenever possible there would be a female casting director in the room whenever there was casting going on. I didn't want to get anywhere near that.
I've heard nothing's personal with Richard. I've heard other producers who were very unsuccessful with the ladies in general come out with anti-casting couch philosophies because it never worked for them. And the ones who were successful at it just never said anything about it. So I don't know if that's happening here or not. No accusations, but that was just, I don't even know why I said it. I'll go on. Somebody said, I'm looking to play blackjack as a counter part-time to supplement my income. How should I handle the $3,000 that I'm starting with as far as max bet spread and betting ramp? I hear about $5 and $10 minimum tables. They don't exist at the casinos in my area without a CSM. The only good shoe game, Six Decks, S17, DAS, No Surrender, usually have a $25 minimum bet. Richard, your turn.
I wouldn't count on supplementing your income with a $3,000 bankroll. And, you know, Vegas is even worse, I think, than, than, I don't know where you live, but, here's what I would suggest. But first of all, you should probably get a hold of, Casino Verde software so you can plug in your bankroll and realize how tremendously underfunded you are. But, what you could do is just back count the $25 table and only jump in at like a true two or higher and bet your $25.
If that's allowed.
The what?
If that's allowed, many places have no mid-shoe entry signs.
Yeah, although some of them, some of them allow mid-shoe but they restrict you to betting the table minimum, which in your case, that would be fine because that's all you would want to bet anyway. You know, you're not going to make any substantial amount of money with that bankroll. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And you are going to have a pretty high risk of losing the entire thing. So, I would invest in, the Casino Verite software and plug it in and look at different betting schemes and what your risk of ruin is going to be.
Okay. Moving on. Somebody lives in Stockton, California. He's been an AP with slots for the past year, earning over 15 hand pays totaling over $45,000. The past 8 months, he engulfed himself into blackjack and had become obsessed with counting cards. He's read Black Belt in Blackjack, The Big Book of Blackjack, Blackjack Blueprint, as well as the classic Beat the Dealers. What other books would you recommend reading? I'd like a more advanced book. Your turn again, Richard.
Well, I like Blackjack Blueprint a lot. The books you have certainly are good enough to cover, you know, learning how to count. You know, you might add Professional Blackjack by Stanford Wong to your list. But then, I mean, for me, I just like to read everything. So, at this point, again, if it were me, I kind of like Ken Houston's books because they had stories about what it was like to be playing. And to me, that stuff is always interesting. But you certainly have the foundation. Blackjack Blueprint, you know, should have anything in it that you would need. But if you want to add Professional Blackjack by Stanford Wong, that would be another one.
All right. This next guy has a really long question. He plays double deck with good penetration in Reno at Harrah's and Cal Neva. Once a month trips, he spreads table minimum, which is $25, all the way up to two hands of 250. He's experienced very little heat, and he uses a high-low count system. Could count a deck down in 20 seconds. He wants to get better at blackjack. He wants to take his name to the next level, but he hasn't been able to link up with serious team, let alone serious players. He's had tried training two close friends, but they don't make training a priority. He wants to know how he can find these great players to hook up with so he can get better. Richard?
Well, first of all, I'm astounded that he can spread 25 to two hands at 250. That's tremendous. Why he's not getting heat, who knows? Maybe he has the Asian superpower, or maybe he has a tremendous act. You know, it's difficult to hook up with other players, but all I can give you is my experience, how it's happened for me. And it's happened in a couple of ways. Number one, eventually, the more you play, you are just going to bump into another card counter at the same table that you are. And usually you do not want to stay on that table, but often what happens is you recognize each other, and then you see the guy leaving the casino, and maybe you go and you meet up with him in the parking lot, and you just strike up a conversation. I mean, that's happened to everyone I know at one time or another. So that's one way you meet people. The other way that was tremendously valuable to me was on the message boards. Blackjack the Forum and BJ21, originally Arnold Snyder had really good forum. And, you know, you start reading the boards and you realize that 90% of the people on them are, you know, kind of amateurs and don't know what they're talking about. There's another forum at Blackjack Boot Camp.
Blackjack Apprenticeship.
Or Blackjack Apprenticeship. Yeah, that's what it's called. But you realize you should be able to spot right away kind of, you know, who's just an idiot and the very few players that are serious and have something valuable to say. And they're not going to, you know, post great stuff there, they're not going to give away the store on the forum. But what happens is, if you go into the chat room, sometimes you start talking to people in the chat rooms or you send them private messages, you know, and you strike up kind of friendships that way through private messages or even in the chat rooms through using the private message features. When I was in the chat rooms, you know, I would see somebody that I thought, oh, this guy is sharp. And then I would start talking to him separately, while the conversation about, you know, which brew pub people like was going on. Those are the two ways that I know to, you know, start to meet other people. And once you meet, you know, one person, a lot of times they connect you to somebody else, you know. And another thing on the forum is, you know, you see people talking and you realize that this guy is from Chicago. So you private message him and say, hey, you know, I'm going to be coming to Chicago to play at, you know, Joliet or whatever, and try to arrange to meet the guy, you know. Now, they're not always going to say yes. But anyway, those are a couple of ways you meet people and start establishing your network.
One of the things that Richard is exceptionally good at is networking. He knows everybody, and he's willing to talk to a lot of different people to figure out who are the smart ones and who aren't the smart ones. So he just loves to sit and chat to people, and he's collecting information and networking with them. I personally am not near as good as that. I kind of get bored with talking to people much quicker than he does. And so this networking comes a lot easier to him than it does to certain other people without the good social skills. So I have no idea of the social skills of this guy in Stockton, but this is an area where social skills helps a lot.
You know, I on that note, when I was in Hollywood, my attitude was I will always take the meeting. And 99% of the meetings in Hollywood don't lead to anything. But you just never know. You just never know who that guy on the other side of the table is going to turn out to be, or where it might lead. And, you know, certainly it's made me an awful lot of money, establishing relationships with people that way, you know.
All right. I have a question from another blackjack player. And he can play very well at home, but in the real world, when his big bet is out there, he gets really, really nervous. He's scared to lose the big bets. and he wants to know how he can get over it. Richard.
You know, this is not uncommon. I had a friend who, when he would bet $500, his hands would shake. Now, that friend ended up saying the gambling life was not for him. You know what I would suggest is get there slowly. If you're okay with betting $100 but not $200, well, then for now, make $100 your top bet. And you know, maybe then try raising it to $150. What happens is if you do it enough, you start to get comfortable with it. And but you don't have to make too big a jump right away. Even though your bankroll may call for you to be betting $500, if you're just not comfortable, then don't do it. You know, bet smaller until you get more comfortable and go up slowly. Because the bosses know that they see it. They can tell that you're not comfortable putting that money out there. Of course, maybe it helps and makes you look like a degenerate, but...
And this is not limited to blackjack. The question was couched in terms of blackjack, but all types of gambling. And everybody has to work this out for themselves. We have different relationships with money. I believe that in order to win, you must be able to put up with the losing that comes with it, because the losing will come. If you can't handle it, and many people can't, then you're not cut out to be an AP. If that's the case, fine, go get a regular job and get a dependable income if that's what you need to be comfortable. Even, you know, using Richard's techniques for some people, it just isn't going to work. They lose $1,000 and they think, my God, that was a down payment that I just gave up. And they just can't shake that.
Yeah.
All right. This is video poker. I think this guy's local casino. He's entered a point challenge. For 14 straight days, he needs to rack up as many points as possible. The winner gets free tickets to a football game, box seats, free food, drinks, and $200 cash. His choice of games are 5-play 9-6 jacks, which is 99.54, or 5-play 9-6 bonus poker deluxe, which is 99.64. He's run the scenario on Video Poker for Winners software and never went flat broke. He only has $10,000 to start with. Which game should I play, or is it just not enough money? And my thought is, if he's playing quarters, you have plenty of money. And then I recommend the Bonus Poker Deluxe because it has higher expected value. If he's playing dollars, you probably should consider jacks are better because of the lower variance. But whatever game you play, there's a probability that other folks are also going to be trying to win, and a possibility, even a significant probability, that you can bust your ass for 14 days and still lose. So to make this worthwhile, hopefully the cash back and free play and whatever other benefits you get are pretty high. The price sounds to me like it's not worth that much. Yes, football seats can be $100 a piece or something, but $200. But so even if the price is worth $500 or $700, playing long hours for 14 days, it's not a very big price. And so whatever it turns out, good luck.
Yeah, and also realize you're also competing with degenerates too. And you know, if there are people who play in the casino every day anyway, that are just losing players, I mean, it's going to be hard to outgrind some of them.
And especially if there's a $5 game that's eligible to play, or $5 5-play, the those they can rack up a lot more points than $1 five play. Okay, our next question. We did get it before football season started, but a listener has a friend who is a very unsuccessful football bettor. Our AP gets this guy's picks in advance and wants to know how to make money fading his action. Since neither Richard nor I are sports bettor, I'm going to defer this question to Frank B. or Captain Jack next time they're on. Richard, did you have any thoughts on that now?
So, wait, I'm sorry. His friend is a knowledgeable sports bettor and...
No, the other way around. His friend is a terrible player, only wins about 40% of his bets. So, friend wants to take those picks and bet the other side and use that.
Okay.
So, he wants to know the best way to do that, what kind of stakes and EV and stuff. So,
Well, I think his thinking is flawed, right? Because the guy is a big losing player doesn't mean you can just bet the other side. Basically, the guy is probably winning 50% of his bets, but he's losing because of the juice. I don't think you can count on the guy actually picking worse than average. So, I think your best bet would be to book the guy's action. You know, just be the bookie.
Which could possibly screw up a friendship. Who knows?
You know what? I actually had exactly that happen. Well, I ended up cutting off a friend because I thought it was going to screw up the friendship. You're exactly right. So,
yeah, Richard and I have made a couple of dozen $10 bets through the years. And when somebody loses, they pay off, no big deal. We could each afford significantly larger bets than that if we wanted to, but why create the possibility of hard feelings? It's making money off of Richard. Betting activity was probably not a smart plan anyway because he's good. But it's just – so we bet $10. All right. Somebody else asked a question. There are features to being an AP that involve some sort of pulling off a heist, which has similarities to cheating. But the AP moves are actually legal. You might get kicked out of the casino – but there's pretty little chance of going to jail. For some players, do you think of this AP work as a stepping stone that leads down the path of criminal activity?
not at all. I agree. There are aspects that look like that. And to me, those are some of the most fun plays that I have ever been on are plays where we literally had to synchronize our watches and, you know, there were people all over the casino and a very complicated play was going on. But no, do I think it leads to criminal activity? No, absolutely not.
Well, I'm going to have a different answer than that, which actually is pretty good because if Richard and I agreed on everything, it'd be a pretty boring show. So if you're asking, does it ever happen that APs cross the line into illegal activity? The answer has to be yes. Sometimes it does. I've been ripped off by APs. Richard has been ripped off by APs. I don't think it happens very often. How often it happens is something I have no reliable data on.
Of course there are APs who do things that are illegal, especially drug use and things. But it sounded to me like his question was, you know, are APs, because of this training, pulling off complicated heists, you know, stealing, making big art thefts or, you know, robbing banks or something, which I don't know any of that have gone that route.
The Yeah, I think you might be confusing APs with televangelists. Those are the guys who go to jail for these things. I probably shouldn't have said that. Okay. So when you have a losing session, would a pro like you quit or continue playing? So for me, a flat better, it would absolutely be time to quit if I lost $3,000. Conversely, if you're having a winning session, would you walk away at some point or continue? Richard?
When I quit playing depends on, is the game still good? And is the casino still happy with me playing there? So the amount of money I'm ahead or behind only is going to affect that decision. It's going to affect it not because of my personal thoughts about the amount of money, but the casino's thoughts about the amount of money. So I'm in $9,000 in cash, and if I buy in any more, I'm going to have to CTR. That means, yes, I'm going to quit. I'm ahead $20,000, and the bosses are starting to sweat blood. Yeah, I'm probably going to quit. So it's really much more about how the casino is feeling about it than about how I'm feeling about it. And on the other hand, if I'm playing poker, then I'm more likely to quit when I'm losing because it may affect my ability to play well. And when I'm winning, you know, things obviously have been going well, which means the players at the table are sometimes intimidated by the guy who's winning all the pots, and I would be much more likely to stay.
Yeah, I never... in general, I agree. And I think APs look towards the future rather than the past. What they think the EV of the game is over the next hour rather than the actual results over the past half hour. I had not yet thought of the idea of it depends on what you think the casino's reaction is. I think that's a very good point and not one that was in my repertoire.
And I should add, in video poker, usually I'm planning to play a certain amount, but if I feel like I'm not sharp, like I'm going to make mistakes, then I'm just going to stop playing.
Yeah, or the promotion ends. It's double points until midnight, so 11:55, I'm cashing out, or something like that. All right, we're about halfway through, and so we're putting the commercials earlier today in the hopes that some of you stick around for later, but we're only halfway through, so there's good incentive for you to do that. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In October, the casino-wide promotion is extra free play for those already receiving free play. You pick up your normal free play every Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and if you do, you get the identical amount of free play every Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. If you make all 8 pickups, you'll be eligible for a larger-than-usual pickup at the end of the month. The video poker classes now are over. The next semester will be starting in early January. We'll be announcing them here a month or so in advance before they start. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. We're airing this show while I'm on vacation, and so I don't know what the game of the week will be when you hear this. So instead of the specific game of the week, I've chosen to talk about one of the videopoker.com games you'll find out there that we don't talk about too much. You can frequently find these games on All Star Poker or All Star Poker 2, which is a game, which is a machine with lots of different varieties of games out there. So the one I'm going to talk about now is called Double Pay Poker. This game costs 10 coins per line to play, and you get paid on the deal from a stud pay schedule. And you also get paid on the draw in the normal way. The deal part pays slightly more than the draw part. So if you're playing a 98.98 double-double bonus pay schedule, the double pay version will return about 99.1. Also, on the deal part, there's no skill at all involved, so you're going to get that EV. Whereas on the play part, you have to play appropriately to get that total amount. So this would be a useful feature for non-expert players. All right. We're back to Bob and Richard answering the mail show. I'm going to put it in now. I don't know how long this is going to last. We have alluded to various weight loss bet stories. I've been involved in a number of them. So I think Richard has too. So Richard, what is your most interesting weight loss bet story?
Oh, so when I was about 17, I was a fat kid. I was very overweight until I was in my early 20s, until I moved out to Las Vegas. So when I was, and my father was fat. So when I was 17, we came up with this weight loss bet, and it was for 30 days, $10 a pound. So the difference between, you know, whatever we lost. And I, the day of the weigh-in, I drank as much water as I could possibly hold and went to the scale with my pockets full of change. And, you know, my father was no dummy. He was like, no, take those clothes off, you know. So we stripped down, so that didn't work, but, and we weighed in, and now for 30 days, we had this bet, and I took it really seriously. I mean, I wanted to win, and, so I was really, cut down on my eating, and I was exercising, and my father was one of those guys who left early in the morning and did not get home until late at night. You know, he just worked like 14, 16 hours a day. And one of the things that when I was a kid, he used to do is sometimes come home late at night with pizza. And so during the course of this month, a couple of times I went and got pizzas and didn't eat any of them, but left them out on the table knowing he would see them when he came home. And so at the end of the 30 days, I did not eat the last day, and I took a diuretic, you know, to get rid of as much water as I possibly could. And I ended up losing 22 pounds in the month, and he lost 4. And he screamed bloody murder. He claimed he had been scammed. He thought the entire family had conspired with me for him to lose this bet, that they weren't telling him how much I was losing as it was going on. So, yeah, that was my weight loss bet.
Actually, mine has more similarities to that than I thought it would. Although mine happened when I was about 40, and I had already met Richard, but I certainly hadn't heard the story. I in the mid 80s, after having gone broke at backgammon, trying to save up enough money to move to Las Vegas, I was working in an IT department of a Fortune 500 company in the Los Angeles area. My best friend there was Michael. Michael was this big, tall, black guy who played basketball at a major university, but the pros didn't want him. So he was now working in an IT department. We were both heavier than we wished to be, so we decided to have a weight loss competition. Neither one of us wanted to bet a lot, so we figured the smart way to do this was to get the entire department involved. You had to pay an entry fee of $20, and each week you didn't lose at least a pound. You had to chip in five more. So we figured we were more serious than anybody else. So any money contributed by others was dead money because we were going to win it. And all told, we got about $500 in the pool, and which winner take all, it's a pretty nice price. Michael overall was smarter than me, but not about gambling or game playing. He thought the contest was about losing weight. I knew the contest was about winning $500. I ended up losing 25 real pounds and about 15 imaginary pounds over the 6 weeks. And the way to lose imaginary pounds is to artificially inflate your weight at the start and find ways to deflate your weight over the last weigh-in. As an example, the guys in the IT department, the mandatory uniform was shirts and ties. Jackets were optional. I had a side job as a country western dance teacher. And a lot of the people in the club or in the department had come to my lessons because they were close to where the office was. So 3 weeks before I even mentioned the idea of a weight loss contest to Michael, I started wearing every day a country western sports jacket, cowboy boots, and a big buckle on the belt, which are common in country western, and they're not as big as wrestling belt buckles, but close. So by the time the weight loss bet thing got started, it had been a whole month of every day, this is my outfit. So it didn't look unusual at all that this is what I wore for the weigh-in. The initial weigh-in took place on a Thursday, and that day I was away from the office because there was some mandatory education something off property that I wanted to go to, which is actually great. You love to get these extra educational things instead of actually working. And the next day I came and weighed in. And the lady who's in charge of taking the money was a nice lady, but basically oblivious to a lot of things. She didn't pay any attention to I was wearing my coat or boots and didn't notice that I had four extra belt buckles in my pocket and about 15 rolls a quarter. Possibly there was a stapler in there too. My weight came in about 10 pounds more than my weight without the add-ons. For subsequent Thursday weigh-ins, because we weighed in every week, I wanted to weigh a little bit less each time, but not a lot less. If I lost 12 pounds in the first week and I looked exactly the same as I did as before, people would have thought something was fishy. And also, it might have spurred them to take me as a serious competitor and try harder to lose weight themselves. So I officially tried to lose about 3 pounds a week. And I would show up a half hour early, weigh myself on the scale when nobody else is around, and make whatever adjustments I needed with my rolls of quarters and jacket or not, and drink whatever liquids I needed to get to be where I wanted to be. And I actually had donated an old scale from home for this weigh-in contest. At home, I had noticed that if you stand in the lower right-hand corner of the scale, it's 3 pounds less than if you stood in the middle of the scale. I forgot to mention that to any of the other people in the department. Preparing for the final weigh-in, I had one pair of beltless pants, so I didn't have a belt on or a buckle. And I was smaller, but my pants didn't fall off, which is probably good because I had figured that for that final weigh-in, nobody who was serious about winning would even think about wearing underwear that day. For the last week before the weigh-in, I drank only water for 5 days and nothing at all for the last two. My final weight was about 5 pounds less than my true weight, simply because you usually carry around about 5 pounds of piss and poop, and I didn't have any of that. Weight loss contest was based as a percentage of starting weight. It wasn't the actual number of pounds. I created a chart with my weight and Michael's, with a line showing the weights we had to lose to be equal to the other. If it was on one side of the line, I would win. If it was on the other side of the line, he would win. On the day of the final weigh-in, I was at the gym at 6 a.m. trying to sweat out the last bit of humidity my body was holding. He still got to work early, and I looked at the chart and learned Michael had to get down to 196 pounds to time me percentage-wise. If he weighed less than that, he won. More than that, he lost. He only made it to 198. It was close. Still, he hadn't weighed less than 200 pounds in 15 years, and he was pretty happy with the whole deal. Since I actually needed to step in the right place on the scale to actually beat him, and he was my best friend, I decided to split the money with him. This felt better to me than using subterfuge to beat somebody, a friend, out of $500. Had it been $10, I would have kept it all and bragged about how I had outsmarted him. But it was $500 at a time where that much money meant a lot more to both of us, and hard feelings could have resulted. Turned out he had done some of his own shenanigans, just like Richard had done shenanigans, and they're not all that hard to figure out. And so if I had known what shenanigans he had pulled, I probably wouldn't have shared the money with him, but it felt right at the time, so that's what we did. Eventually, we laughed about it. We told each other what we had done and laughed about it, and remained my best friend for a couple more years till I got laid off because I was spending more time playing backgammon than I was working on being a IT professional, and so and we lost track.
Would you have won the bet if you guys had both just done it square? Or do you know?
I don't know. I think probably yes. I had lost, I think probably yes, but I don't know for sure. It was close. I mean, the final with both of us pulling our shenanigans was still really close, because if he had lost two more pounds, he would have won. And like the last day, he fasted totally. If he had fasted 2 days, he probably would have won. So, who knows? All right. Another question. I have another weight loss story, but I'm going to share that the next time we do one of these. Thank you. This has been fun, Richard. I enjoy these. Hopefully our listeners find them entertaining as well. We're going to be doing another one in the near future. I'm not sure. It'll be aired sometime in early November, I think. And looking forward to it. So thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.